on Government Affairs and have a public hearing on Senate Bill 1026. And Marjorie, are you wanting to present anything about this? Then we'll have public testimony.
Chair Kalana, members of the committee, this is the unemployment insurance bill, and what the bill does, for the first quarter of 2003 only, increases the unemployment benefits by $13 per week and decreases the unemployment insurance tax paid by employers. In your packet, you do have a fiscal and a revenue impact statement, and I just want to bring that to your attention.
Okay, thank you. Any comments or questions to staff?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Yee.
So how can we increase benefits and lower taxes at the same time?
Well, I think
we'll ask our first public witnesses to come up, and maybe they can answer that, and if they can't, we'll ask for someone else to do it. We signed up. We have Joe Gilliam and J.L. Wilson. Anyone else? You heard Senator Yee's question. Do you want to respond to that, or do you want me to have someone else?
Madam Chair, for the record, Joe Gilliam, representing the Oregon Grocery Industry Association. I believe we can respond. If not, we have Frank Ritchie from the department here who did crunch the numbers. But the long and short of it is the federal government let me back up. In the first special session, we passed House Bill 4021, and in anticipation that the federal government would give us what they call READ Act dollars, and we'd anticipated a $55 million allocation to the state fund. We passed the first bill because of that money with a 13-week extension in benefits plus $20 increase in benefits, and in anticipation that the money would come in and that would fund both the increase in benefits and the decrease in the tax rates. So you could do both at the same time. Lucky for us, the federal government actually acted once in our favor. They paid for the 13-week extension and gave us nearly twice the READ Act dollars that we anticipated. So not only were we able to do 40-21, we're able to do one more quarter of benefit increases and tax decreases for one more quarter in 2003. Then the money's gone, so we can't do it any further.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Joe. Does that help, Senator Yee?
So it means because of additional federal money, you can do both.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Good question. Okay. You've already introduced yourself for the record. If you'd like to go ahead and present your testimony.
Madam Chair, that's really the bulk of my testimony, really, is from that question, is the fact that we had these extra dollars come in. We would like to extend the economic stimulus package that we did in House Bill 4021. The only difference will be this, is in order to keep an adequate reserve fund, which is really the 5% of your fund you want to keep there, it's about $76 million, I believe, is the number we're trying to keep in balance. We can do a $30 million economic stimulus package. That would be $15 million towards the employee benefit package and $15 million towards employers' rate reduction. That translates into a smaller rate reduction than we did before and a $13 increase per week rather than a $20 increase. But that's all the money we have. If we went any further, we'd be jeopardizing rates and going where nobody wants to put us in that kind of financial position. And so it would be really just a straight extension to that first quarter.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm J.L. Wilson, representing the National Federation of Independent Business. Joe's done a thorough job. I'll just say that we support the bill. It's our contention that the money, if available, which we see that it is about $30 million, if it's available, it's especially in today's economy, put to better use in the hands of small employers and those who are currently unemployed. That's our position, and we are in support of 1026.
Any questions from the committee? Senator Atkinson?
Just for the record, gentlemen, could you state that this is an even 50-50 one more time? There's been some rumors around that the benefit is lopsided, either for in some rumors for the employee or some lopsided for business.
Again, Joe Gilliam. Mr. Chair, the breakdown would be as such. Because when you start doing these numbers, we try to keep the employee benefit to an even number just for the convenience of math and legislation. So the $13 a week is equal to $14.14 million. And the 0.16% tax reduction is worth 15.68. So it's about $1 million in favor, a little over $1 million in favor of the employer. So if you do the percentages and trying to balance that round dollar figures, you're at $29.82 million total. So that's, those figures add up to 29.82. It's very, very close, and we you know, when rounding the math, you just come to those numbers.
One other question, just to make sure we have it on the record. This one has the 13-week, or $13 increase. What is the, is there a week extension like we did on the last one? Or a maintenance of the, I just want to make sure we get this on the record, a maintenance of the extension we did on the last one.
Madam Chair, Senator Atkinson, it is a just an extension of what we did on the last one through March 28th, so it's a full quarter. The original bill last time went just 2 weeks shy of a full quarter in the 2003, and then we fixed that, and now we're adding a full quarter.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further comments, questions? Not. That's all. Anyone else as far as testimony? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1026 and open a session on Senate Bill 1026.
Madam Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
I would move Senate Bill 1026 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson moves Senate Bill 1026 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Not so moved. Senator Atkinson, will you carry that bill, please?
Certainly.
Thank you. Close the work session on Senate Bill 1026 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1025. You want to talk about this measure? We'll take a momentarily recess here for a second. Recess, and what we'll do is continue with the public hearing on House Bill or Senate Bill 1025. And with that, Marjorie, would you explain to us a little bit about what the bill does?
Chair Clarno, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1025 does two primary things. First of all, it directs the Department of Education to adopt and administer nationally recognized norm-referenced academic achievement tests. And also, it makes optional the implementation of SIM and CAM and current state criterion reference tests.
Thank you, Marjorie.
Mm-hmm.
And first, on the sign-up sheet, we have Stan Dunn, school superintendent. Come forward, please, and introduce yourself to the record. You know the routine as well as I do.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stan Bunn, Superintendent of Public Instruction with offices at 255 Capitol Street. And to my right is Bill Audi, our Head of Assessment, Associate Superintendent for Assessment. Madam Chair, we appreciate the opportunity to appear before you and make comments on this legislation, and I would like to say first that I've not had an opportunity to carefully review every word of the legislation, but based on my understanding of the legislation, and I'll outline those understandings, we would appear in opposition to this legislation. Oregon has a 10-year investment in developing a sound and strong system of standards and assessment. It has resulted in tremendous achievement growth by students, and I'll give just one example. Approximately 10 years ago, measuring with these same standards, third graders accomplished to a 52% level, and today we are looking at student achievement at an 84% level. Allowing districts to opt out of the SIMS-CAM requirements sends a message that the state is not serious about high standards for students. With a new assessment system, we would lose clarity that we have gained in identifying and targeting assistance that's needed for students that have particular problems. When we embarked upon the system of the SIMS-CAM, what we really had in the state of Oregon as a standard was that you must have a diploma and at least a D average. And I would ask the question, if we move away from the very high and rigorous standards of the SIMS-CAM and that assessment system, what in fact will we be left with to assure students are doing a rigorous and quality job statewide? We have worked very hard with the U.S. Department of Education and the Bush administration to be sure that we meet the requirements of No Child Left Behind, the ESEA. They have looked at our system standards assessment and accountability and have said they like it. We have had national panels review that. And basically, if we walk away from the SIMS-CAM at this time, we have to rebegin our work with the federal government for approval of our assessment system in a very, very costly process. And it puts us in the position of a risk of losing $500 million of federal money, being out of compliance with the federal civil rights law because of testing around disabilities. And I want to give you just some of the complications. We have been involved in litigation at the Department of Education. We have settled that litigation around testing students with disabilities. We would have to start that process all over again. The cost of that process, the uncertainties, and the potentials of litigation and the costs involved there again. It would jeopardize our ability to receive federal competitive grants. We would need to make expensive changes to the Oregon School Report Card. Our report card that this legislature mandated would not work as it works now. We have several years of history around the report card where we're measuring apples and apples. We would now have a new measuring system and throw out the ability to measure the quality of schools against their past performance and past conduct. We would lose our EdFlex status in Oregon, which allows us to get rid of some of the cumbersome requirements and rules set up by the federal government. Now, you hear from state agencies and state agency heads from time to time when there's legislation that makes major changes, we're in danger of losing federal funds. And you always have to ask yourself the question, how serious is that? Has any agency really lost the federal funds? And are we really looking at that kind of situation? I want to suggest to you that President Bush has said this is a no-nonsense situation. Our states are going to step up to the plate and produce under their current systems with the development of the additions we, the federal government, put in place, or you're out in the cold. And they have expressed extreme irritation at the fact that states hadn't come along historically to the degree that they felt they needed to. And Oregon has positioned itself because of its history of working successfully with the federal government and pleading successfully with them that we had a system in place that they and we could use to avoid the kind of sanctions that some states, I believe, will face very directly. Now, I would ask you to sort of separate from your consideration here the misunderstandings of the SIMCAM, what it isn't compared to what it is. We're talking about a system that's in place that is high standards that replaced a minimal, unacceptable, mediocre standard for the state. And now we're talking about that simply magically move from that 10 years of investment and work to some national standard. Now, let me describe what the national standard and national test is, though there are many of them and they don't exist in one unified way. When we looked at Oregon standards and national panels looked at those standards and assessment, about 30% of what we needed was in the national test. 30% of the rigorous effort and commitment around students. Now, those national tests are in reality designed, and I'm going to simplify, designed around Texas, New York, and California textbooks. And those textbooks driving, because of the size of those states, the national effort in national testing. And I want to suggest to you that that doesn't get, after careful review, what our students need in this state in terms of high quality and rigor. I would urge you and plead with you not in this kind of a short time process where we haven't even been able to get the complete fiscal impact to abandon 10 years of work that is partnering well with the federal government and have us start all over. We've been able to put our plan forward under ESEA quickly, swiftly for approval because we had things in place. And I think it would do a great disservice to the students of this state to walk away from that tremendous planning effort and the quality of that work. We'd be glad to answer any questions that you might have.
Senator Atkinson?
Thank you for your testimony. That sheds a few, some new lights on this. I think that part of the frustration a lot of people feel, especially from rural Oregon, is just the sheer cost. I think that's probably one of the things that's driving us here today in a budget crunch, is the sheer cost and the amount of money it takes for teachers to get up to speed with testing for it. The area coordinators, I believe, that are now starting to be in place, and the overarching implementation of it. I get quite a bit of constituent concern over several things, and perhaps are misunderstandings, but students that say, what value is the SIM and the CAM when they move on to college? What other states are doing this, and how does it fit? Those are some of the things that perhaps you could speak to. And then also, I believe that the word here is optional. I mean, I don't think the intent is to abandon; it's to give breathing room for a fiscal cost. There's three things. I'm sorry to throw them all at you at once, but
that's
response to your.
Madam Chair, Senator Atkinson. First, on the optional, optional in reality means there is no standard. If every school in the state, the 1,200 schools approximately in this state, can pick and choose whether they adhere to that standard, then there is no standard. And the federal government has said, regardless of what this state does, that they will now have a rigorous standard. And as I mentioned, they like our standard. Students do ask at times, what are the values of the SIM and CAM? I would say first that if third graders, for example, are instead of 52% reading at standard, 84% reading at standard, those additional 30-plus students that can now read in a way they couldn't, that in itself has a tremendous, powerful, inherent advantage. And that advantage follows that third grader all the way through the K through 12 experience, all the way into community college, or the workforce. Beyond that, higher education has been working for years and will have by 2005 in place processes by which the students can have entry into the college system based on their standards achievement, and that is a portion of their work. They're also looking at all sorts of things like scholarships, like choice of room, dorm room, early entry, automatic entry, those sorts of things as a part of the process. You can't develop, either on a national or a state level, major standards with greater opportunities that overnight have all those opportunities translated. The Oregon Business Council would tell you that they're working with their members to allow a part of the application process to include these standards and then waive other requirements that would have otherwise been there. So those are beneficial for the students. In terms of the costs, my very strong belief, and I think we'll be able to demonstrate it within the next few days, is that the cost to school districts and the cost to the Department of Education will be substantially higher if we abandon this effort and move to some alternative based on the federal government's rigorous requirements. So I think it's a lose situation there. Other states are Massachusetts, Virginia, Texas, a number of states are working with rigorous standards just as we are. And frankly, those states who haven't kept up with that have a tremendous disadvantage as they're working with the federal government today.
Thank you.
Further questions?
Madam Chair.
Yes. Senator Yee.
Superintendent Bunn, you say the fiscal impact is not ready on this bill. Because I'm curious about what does it cost to have this non-reference academic achievement testing for every grade?
Well, first of all, the federal government is going to require much of that third grade through 10th grade. What we want to do, and part of that testing is called NAEPS testing. It's a national testing system. We want to be able to use that as we do now and use our standards as we do now. And we are working with the federal government and well along in the process of approval for those. So if we can use our current system, we will have little additional cost in terms of the parts of that system that are in place. But if we have to completely abandon that and start over, we would have substantial costs. But I'll ask Bill Audi if he wanted to comment on that.
Thank you. The,
you want to put your name on the record, please?
Sure. My name is Bill Audi. I'm the Associate Superintendent for the Office of Assessment and Evaluation, Department of Education. Madam Chair, member of the committee. I understand what is being proposed here, we would have to implement a norm-referenced national test in, I think it's 7 different subject areas. And the federal legislation to which Dan referred talks about reading and mathematics to state standards, so that we probably would be, at least initially, unable to use any of the off-the-shelf national tests for that purpose. So we'd be giving the national test and our test for ESEA and then the optional tests that we've been working with over time. The hesitate to give a cost right now because the publishers have just gotten a great windfall of testing all over the country, and a lot of my peers who do contract for tests are looking at greatly increased costs. But it is, can't do the math in my head, but somewhere between $3 and $12 per student per subject, and we have 40,000 students per grade. So it's a lot of money that would be essentially in addition to what we're currently spending for our system.
Another question, Madam Chair.
Senator Yee, please.
So currently, do we test every grade, or do we just test 3rd, 5th, 7th, and 9th? Is that all?
4 grades, 3, 5, 8, and 10th grade.
3, 5, 8, and 10th. All. But does this bill call for testing every grade?
In grades 1 through 12, yes.
1 through 12. Mm-hmm. So is this something that can be done in the classroom by teachers and be graded by teachers rather than going the expense of doing it by contractor?
I would doubt that, in that a nationally normed test, Stan referred earlier to there is no national norm. These are constructed by publishers, and they go once every 10 years, they do a sample where they establish the national norm for their test. and that's their property, so they sell that and recoup the cost through their testing. So they would be unlikely to give us their tests and allow teachers to score them internally.
Oh, I see.
Madam Chair and Senator Yee also, I think there's another area of uncertainty that's very important. We have been able, through what's called TESA, a very strongly supported computerized-based testing system supported by the legislature, to give tests in a way that students now can get a result in 5 minutes. It's not at all clear if we went to a national test with their structure and their rules and their guidelines whether we would be able to use our TESA testing system as a part of that system. And before we put TESA in place, students would take tests and get the results back the next year. That's a huge difference in terms of the learning capacity of that student based on getting feedback from the tests.
Thank you.
Mr. Audie, did you have anything further you would like to say? Any further comments or any further questions from the committee?
Thank you very much.
Thank you both.
Thank you for your time.
Next, Senator Duncan.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Vern Duncan, State Senator from Clackamas County. And I hate to take your time, but I'm willing to do that because I think you've heard me expound on this often, but I really want to emphasize it since we're at a very serious stage, and I want to comment. I concur. I can't believe that we're talking about saving money and we're trying to find dollars, and here we have a bill before us that's going to cost more money. And I that just overwhelms me to think that we would be doing that at this particular time. We spent years trying to develop the criterion reference kind of a test. And the thing I do like is that they are trying to match the criterion reference with a NAEP test, which is a nationally normed kind of a test. But the idea of moving out and using a publisher's kind of a moneymaker kind of a test to tell us a story is not the way we should be going. The concern I have right now with the whole SIM and CAM, and I've heard every argument that probably you folks have heard and everyone has heard. I've heard from teachers, I've heard from students, grandchildren, everyone, about the test. But, you know, I guess the thing I want to emphasize, and just a few moments ago, another senator and I were sitting in my office looking at the third grade SIM standards, what is expected of a third grader. And again, there is not a thing in that list that any one of you would want your child or your grandchild not to learn in the third grade. And the problem is the paperwork that goes with it, and that's where teachers are complaining about. I understand that. I think, and this, they talked about the TESA program, where you're going to be able to get some instant information, the feedback will be right there for a student. The paperwork that will be saved for teachers, part of the problem, we are part of the problem as a member of the legislature. I think we even cut back, I don't remember the figures, it was on Ways and Means, but they were trying to expand the computer system for, was it a $600,000 fee? I could be wrong.
It was millions.
It's close. $600,000 or $10 million. I knew it was right. I knew it was right in there, close. But anyhow, I'm sorry.
No wonder we're in trouble if you think $600,000 and $10 million are better.
Glad I'm not the superintendent nowadays. But anyhow, But I think that kind of investment would alleviate a lot of the concerns that you're hearing. Teachers are concerned, obviously, about the testing. They're concerned about the possibility will they be evaluated upon that. And I understand that as a teacher, you know, and I've had classes come through. I would love to have you evaluate me on their test scores. I've had years when certain students came through and I kind of cringe, say, well, you're going to evaluate me on this particular year. For evaluation, you have to look at a trend through the years. And so I think there is that fear out there that's going to exist, and teachers, until they get some more confidence in the whole program, will continue to deal. But right now, the concern I have is we would be sending a terrible message to the schools in the state if all of a sudden we pull the rug. As I said, they'll have to go back, start all over in another kind of a system, the education community, as I understood from one of my Senate colleagues in his particular field, has had to go through the same thing. You get something you get done and you pull the rug out from them. We just create the problem for them. And we send a bad message to the education community of the state. I know there are educators who would say, boy, oh boy, pull the rug. We'd love to have it go. But they may not like the process of having to go through the restructuring of a new system. Because I can assure you, accountability is not going to go away. We are in an era of accountability. When I started teaching, you took a textbook, and you had the textbook as your guide. And that's what you were held accountable for. Some teachers got clear through the textbooks, and others didn't. Nowadays, you have a responsibility to see that kids learn certain things. And I mentioned this third grade system. When my granddaughter goes into the third grade next year, she has these skills. Let's assume that that doesn't meet several of those skills. If she moves into the fourth grade, the records will still show that maybe she cannot use vivid adjectives, and she needs to work on that skill. The fourth grade teacher will have to continue working on that. And she should, because you want them to be able to write. We hear all the time, kids can't write. They can't write a simple sentence. They can't write a paragraph. Well, this sets it out in structured form through the years. And once you get the system really going, get the testing program going, you are going to see great progress in the state. Granted, right now, there are a lot of war stories out there. And I understand those. But for heaven's sakes, let's not throw out a system that has the potential of being a great system to start all over. And think of the cost. I mean, I'm serious, folks. This is a dollar situation you're talking about, too. Now, I wouldn't be just selling it, talking to you on the basis of dollars. I want to take the educational concept first. That's the important thing. This is a good educational plan. It needs to be improved. Needs to be moved forward. But don't throw it out. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Duncan.
I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Any comments or questions? Senator Atkins is thinking, I think.
I sit next to him in caucus. I can, you know.
Senator Duncan, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts.
I'll kick you next time.
I have an awful time keeping my caucus in line. Anyway, Senator Starr.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Senator Charles Starr. And like the previous speaker, I've heard those stories, and I've heard them from teachers. Teachers tell me that someone CAM is a failure, that one of these days we're going to figure that out and they're going to get the blame for it. And that'd be tragic because they're not to blame. It's the system. School board members have told me that this is a burden which state has not funded, and we're wasting our resources implementing a plan that's not producing the results for our children that we desire. High standards, third grade standards that we're just talking about, those are not world-class standards. They're not standards that I was taught by. Our expectations are not high enough. We don't expect enough, and we don't compare well in the world. Superintendents tell me that this is state law, and we can't say that we don't like it because that would conflict with the state law and with what we're trying to accomplish with our teachers. It'd send a bad message. Students, and particularly the more gifted students, are telling me that CIM is a waste of our time. I'm having difficulty passing the CIM, but I am taking advanced placement courses and passing with high grades. But I can't pass the CIM because it's so convoluted. We should expect more. We must expect more. And we can't do it with this system. One day we're going to know that it doesn't accomplish what we desire for our children. I've been saying that for 10 years. And lots of the public out there beginning to wake up to this? Will it cost more? I doubt it. Will we make it cost more? We could. But I believe that if we don't do this now, then when? And we're going to face the music one day, and we're going to expect more from our children. Our performance, 84% of third graders passing a very weak third grade reading test, certainly that's improvement. If we're testing everyone, and I doubt that we are, I think we're eliminating those who entered kindergarten not English speakers. I think we're eliminating children who are diagnosed and put on IEPs because they weren't taught to read in kindergarten and first grade. I think that we've got problems that we know how to solve, and we need to get about it. If we don't make this optional now, we will one day. We will eliminate it, and we will understand that it was a trial that failed, and we knew from other countries and from other trials, like Chicago, like England, that tried this system for 20 years and said, don't go there, folks. We tried it. It didn't work. Let's get back to teaching the basics, and let's make it work. We are too great a nation to dumb down our education system as we've done in the last 50 years. But if we don't elevate our expectations so that 30% of our college, four-year college graduates in this nation read at the seventh grade level, then I think we're going to continue to be in serious trouble. Please pass this to the floor for a vote. I believe it's the right thing to do, and let's do it. Thank you. I'll answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions for the committee? No, thank you, Senator Starr. Senator Miller?
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, State Senator Randy Miller. One thing I've noticed in nearly 20 years in this process is it's very difficult to admit failure, and it's not something that's easy in any particular public setting, but clearly this particular experiment is a monumental failure. It is an incredible waste of time, an incredible waste of teachers' talents, an incredible waste of student time. And I speak to you as one who admits that in 1991 I was there at the creation. I didn't know who Ira Magaziner was, but having seen his subsequent performance with the Clinton Health Plan, the National Health Plan, that was a total failure, I'm not surprised that he was one of the architects of this plan. It passed, I think there were 5 no votes in both chambers. We were sold on the idea that this would be something we could do to improve schools, something everybody in this process wants. There was nothing in the way of any detail as to how it was going to get done, but it clearly has not developed in any way that benefits our students. And I can also say, as one who has not only followed this as a legislator, but one who has a student in public schools right now and who has had to come into contact with the SIM program. And I can remember going through the parent-teacher conferences, and perhaps maybe the redeeming value is if a parent never, ever chose to speak to their child about how they were doing in school, maybe this was their opportunity.
but all of the nonsense portfolio, all of the teacher training time that detracted by having a number of in-service days that took away from educating my daughter, frankly, ought to concern all Oregonians. She is in an accelerated program and will graduate from high school early. She has begun checking into some colleges. And I just talked with a friend of mine in the back of the room who has a daughter who is doing that same thing right now. And, of course, when they check with colleges and universities to see what the value of the SIM or CAM is, of course, the answer is there isn't any value. No college or university, so far as I'm aware, cares whether any student has achieved a SIM or a CAM. In fact, they might hold it against them. I think many of them confuse it with the basic education test that some people take when they don't have a high school diploma. So, and this weekend, I was at a situation with my daughter over in Central Oregon who was in a basketball tournament. One of the coaches there is also a teacher, knew that I had this particular position. I didn't realize we'd have a hearing on this bill that I've been, frankly, promoting for about the last 8 years. Said, please get rid of the SIM and CAM. It is just depriving me of an opportunity to teach. And I believe him. And I've heard that chorus in louder and louder voices grow over the years as teachers become more frustrated. And they should. And so I'm hopeful that we will at least advance this to the floor. And one thing about this, we can argue till we're blue in the face, and I'm sure you're maybe not too weary of testimony yet, but Jason, I'm sure, is getting closer. But I would say this. This is optional. For those who feel threatened that if this bill passed, the SIM and CAM would disappear, then that indeed is a statement that local districts apparently wouldn't support it if, given what we all say we like, local control would prevail. So why do we have to put ourselves in the position of imposing our continued poor policy on unwilling districts? You must give the locals some credit. Let's give teachers some credit that maybe they know what is good for our students. Maybe they know better than some bureaucratic program worked up by legislators who were apparently sold a bill of goods about 10 years ago. So I'm hopeful, again, this bill will be referred. It will save money. It will save time in the classroom. It will help save education. I thank you for your time and your consideration.
Thank you, Senator Miller. Any questions or comments? I noticed that you commented that you weren't sure about the testimony, how much testimony Senator Atkinson could stand. I'm telling you that Senator Yee and I are here for all night. Us young kids.
Madam Chair,
my comments here are, as
Senator Duncan sits on my left, it is Senator Miller who sits on my right, so I'm just very keenly aware of all the time we've spent together today.
Thank you, Senator Miller. We appreciate you coming. Senator George? Are you Senator Atkinson? I have to give somebody a bad time.
I'm your guy.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If the people only knew how silly we get when it gets late in the building.
Long day.
I'm here to support this bill, and two sessions ago I had a bill that was very similar to this. It said, gee, you know what, everywhere I go in the school, to my school districts and talk to teachers, and I have a lot of teachers in my family members of my family who are teachers, and one of the things that I continue to hear from them is, for goodness sakes, get the bureaucracy off of our back. Just the other day, my legislative assistant and I had an opportunity to go out to a school district, and then just a day or two later, we had a town hall. And when we were touring this district, it's a grand little school, and I can say that because it's out of Grand Ron. And as we were out there touring the school, they were showing us a very, very successful set of programs. It's Title I school, great things going on. We're going to close the school. Then they said, Senator George, where's the money? And I said, gee, do you realize how much money we've been appropriating, for K-12? And I said, you know, for example, I said, when you look at the national average of expenditure, $6,627, this is from the National Education Association rankings in the year 2000, $6,627, we're spending $8,605, but actually it's way more than that. We're spending over $12,000 per student. But what we were told was, relative to, as we toured the school, and they didn't even know we were coming, so we got one of those really fresh tours, is that these files are occupying so much time and so much space that we're trying to figure out where are we going to put all of the files, because each teacher prepares one and passes it on, then they build another, and then, of course, you have this massive accumulation of data that I can guarantee you no one's going to look at. And that's a really sad thing. But as Senator Miller commented, back when this was passed, there were some great promises that were made. And those of you who remember that debate, where we were told that we were going to, first of all, analyze a student and see what their potential was, and then provide opportunities no matter what direction they took. If they were going for a strictly academic type of college bound, we were going to help them. And then we were going to have, the industrial arts and all of those kind of programs. And at the maximum, this was only going to cost us about $2.5 billion over 10 years. Well, the sad news is we've spent more than the $2.5 billion. Those programs don't exist. The process has now used up the money. And that's, to me, one of the most pitiful things, that if we are spending somewhere between $250 million per year, about per biennium, because one thing to think about, if you'll take the $8,600 and deduct the $6,600 national average, multiply that basically $2,000 a student times the enrollment of about 550, you get over $1 billion. Is that what it is? Is it SIM and CAM? The reason we're so far above the national average, is that it? I don't know. I'm going to take them at their word that it's somewhere between $250 million and $1 billion. I'm just going to assume that somewhere in there is the cost. But the thing that troubles me is the cost, of course, to the student, because we're seeing so many students, when they hit the wall and they're unable to pass, become discouraged. Also what I'm seeing, and this is what I want to share with you, what we received at the town hall, was that teachers were very upset, and staff was upset, and administrators were upset. And I said to them, on one of the comments that was made, let me back up on that, was get all of these requirements off our back. And I pointed out to them that several years before, I had invited them to send to me all of these state and federal requirements, that we would fight the state to get them off their back, and that we would travel to Washington, D.C. in order to try to get Congress to get them off their back. Well, I said, is there any particular thing that we can help you with? Yes, make the SIM and CAM optional. That was said not only to us directly in the town hall, but after, as we interfaced with teachers. I think when we think about the consequences of what we've done here, and Senator Miller very articulately said, sometimes it's very difficult to admit that we made a mistake. But here what we're doing is we're saying, if we have made a mistake, local school district that we all cherish, you have an option. If you believe in the SIM and CAM and you've perfected it and you have it working, you go right on ahead. And if, in fact, districts say, no, we don't want to do that, or if, in fact, we need to join with them to go back to Congress right now talking about enacting something similar, parallel, as Senator Duncan said, then maybe we need to do that and say, whatever you do, don't do this. Don't make the same mistake we have made. Because it's not beyond federal government to make the same wrong moves that states have made. We follow it down. These things have a momentum, it's many times driven by rather bizarre agenda. But what I'm going to say to you is, today, you have a choice. I mean, we're going to be pro-choice today when we say, let's give the school districts an opportunity to analyze their staff, analyze their budgets, and then come to a conclusion as to whether they want to participate or not. It's the right thing to do. And at a time when we're telling the districts that if we can't resolve these budget debates, between the different groups, that there may be additional reductions, then we've got to give them the options and freedoms to adjust their budgets, just like you, all of you would do, and I would do, relative to our own homes and our own businesses. So that freedom to adjust your budget, I think, is really contingent upon that fact that they don't, as one administrator shared with a friend of mine, said a small district in which he handles basically curriculum and administrative jobs receives a pile of information every week or so relative to this whole school reform, and I think right now is a chance to possibly reform the reform. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. George. I think you mentioned you have children in the school system.
All five of mine are graduates of the school system. I have 19 members of my family that are in the education profession. When I was in California just recently, I had a chance to talk with some of my nieces, and one of the things they shared with us is, and the parallel is, that we have duplicated what California's done. We've taken away local control, just as California has done. And what they were saying is they're facing the same thing in the classroom as our teachers, and that is, the comment that was made, not only by my niece, but also my sister, comment made a few years ago, we are classroom teachers, not bureaucrats. Okay? Our job is to teach the children their lesson plans. And we cannot do that when we're bogged down in all of this paperwork. And she shared with me some of the things that California has done. Not the same plan, but the same consequences. So I think the main thing that we need to learn from that is maybe in an effort to get accountability, we've created a situation in which there is no accountability, particularly for the dollars that should be going to the classroom.
Thank you, Senator. Any other questions?
Thanks.
The comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
That's all we have signed up. At this time, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1025. And we have a little concern with what was passed earlier. And I think we moved too fast and need to kind of gather something back here within our fold. Senator Atkinson?
Do you have to open a work session?
Thank you very much. Yes, I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 1026.
I move that we reconsider the vote by which we sent Senate Bill 1026 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
The motion is to reconsider the motion by which we sent Senate Bill 1026 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? If not, so ordered. So now we have the bill back in our possession, and we'll hold on to it gently until we decide to do something else with it. Anything else to come before the committee? If not, I close the session, and we are adjourned. Thank you, committee members.
You know, another few committees like this.